Hour number three of Darren and Donnie here on ESPN 102.5. The game on this Thursday afternoon as they are underway in the NCAA tournament. And they are rocking and rolling right now. LSU up on Yale 19-13, approaching the midway point of the first half. And Minnesota at the half, leading the Louisville Cardinals 38-33. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Predators and Penguins tonight here in Bridgestone Arena, 7 o'clock puck drop. Pregame at 6 right here on 102.5 The Game. Now, we had an opportunity on Monday when we were at Sudden Service up in Gallatin. We had a really good talk as Belmont had just arrived in Dayton, Ohio for their play-in game against Temple. And we got a chance to catch up with Belmont AD Scott Corley. And we had a fun conversation with him. And I informed Scott that I apologized on the front end. It was probably going to make him a little queasy. But I told him what I had said emphatically on the show earlier, and this is kind of how it went down. I'm going to end this and make you cringe. You didn't hear it because, like, said, you were going to Dayton, but I have already boldly predicted many, many times on this show, Scott, this is going to be a very successful trip in Dayton. You guys are going to take care of business, and you are indeed going to win tomorrow night. It is going to happen. It's done. Congratulations. Put a big smile on your face. You're coming back very, very happy and getting ready for a Maryland team.
Well, that's good to know. I can relax now the rest of the trip. Thank you, Darren.
If you lose my number.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to blame it on you if we do. It's exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know the guys will be ready to play, and that's all you can ask for is the opportunity to get that win and then move on.
No doubt about it. Yeah, it is obviously a ton of eyes in this market are going to be watching tomorrow night. It's going to be fun. Go have fun. Thanks for doing this, and we look forward to talking to you again soon about that big tournament victory.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right, there you go. I was right. Scott was right. He just said they were ready to play. He just told us in Dayton on Monday they were ready to play. Indeed, they were. They beat Temple by 11. Now they'll be ready to play here in about 2 hours or so. So with that being said, let's head down to Jacksonville, Florida. So from Dayton, Ohio to Jacksonville, Florida, we check back in with Belmont's AD, Scott Corley. Scott, how you doing?
Oh, doing great, Darren. I heard you're taking credit for that win.
A little bit.
A little bit. Yeah, rumor had it that Coach Bird in the pregame did say, guys, we really got to get this done for Darren and Willie. And they came through for you, man.
Hey, whatever works, right?
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, hopefully he's got a good speech for this Maryland team. So let's ask you right out of the gates, what was it like? I mean, take us through it. You were there. What was it like watching Belmont win their first NCAA tournament game?
Well, so special, obviously. I mean, the excitement, the, you know, feeling so proud to see the guys in the locker room celebrating and Coach Bird being part of that, and, you know, to know that you made history. I know the team takes a lot of pride in that. And then, you know, obviously it was short-lived. Then you're boarding a plane, a charter plane at 2 a.m. in the morning. You land in Jacksonville, get to the hotel about 4:30, and you got to get back to work. But, boy, there was obviously a great feeling. The city of Dayton and that whole experience was first class. You know, a great crowd there. And, you know, we weathered a couple, minutes where we didn't play our best. But then to come away with an 11-point victory and to see the joy and jubilation was obviously fantastic.
Yeah, we had Michael Benkert on the show yesterday, and what a crazy schedule for you guys. What did you get into Jacksonville? What did he say, Willie? Like
4:30.
4 in the morning, something like that? I mean, not much sleep.
No, not much sleep at all. And obviously they've been able to catch up a little bit with that, but you know, it's Cadillac problems at this time of the year for sure. I know the guys will be ready to go today. And, you know, obviously it's going to be a very difficult challenge with a great Maryland team that's going to pose a lot of problems. But I know they're excited and they'll be ready to roll.
What did it mean for you? Give us kind of the inside to an AD's life. When, you know, it's one thing to have a conversation with Rick Bird or, as I mentioned, a player like Benkert yesterday, what it means to them. But kind of give us the AD perspective. What has life been like for you and your phone since Belmont, you know, knocked it down? What has that changed for you?
It's just been great to see all the people that, you know, care about our program, send nice text messages, you know, they're so fired up. Our fan base is fired up. You know, that is clearly very special. You know, then spending more time than I ever thought, you know, working through ticketing requests and how we're going to seat people, but that's a fun problem to have for sure. And so, you know, obviously it validates our program in a lot of ways. And, you know, it just builds an excitement and enthusiasm around it as an AD that you crave for. I mean, you know, a Belmont in the mid-majors, I mean, we're always struggling for national attention. We're always struggling for it. You know, in the national media, it's tough because there's a lot of other good programs and professional sports. And so, you know, just to see that and be a part of that from my perspective as running the department, it's nothing but it's outstanding. And then to have a women's team in the tournament, and then, you know, a couple of days ago, the Inside Ed, Higher Ed put us out for our academic achievements, where the men won the bracket in their bracket buster or bracket contest, and the women came in second. So from an AD's perspective, I couldn't ask for a better week because it just demonstrates that our student-athletes are getting it done on the court and in the classroom. So it's been fantastic.
Scott Corley is with us, athletic director at Belmont University. They are moving on to take on Maryland today. And, Scott, before we look at today's matchup, I do want to ask you about a couple of pivotal moments in the game against Temple. I thought it was a great game. Well played both teams. It went back and forth. And I thought one of the things that was huge, and it's going to be big again today, was Temple clearly said, hey, we don't want to have specifically Windler, but any of the three-point shooters for Belmont to get easy looks. So when they threw the ball into the post to Musinski, they rarely double-teamed, if ever, and Musinski had a really efficient game. I thought that was probably the key to the game.
No doubt. I mean, we're so much better when Nick's on the floor offensively and going through him because he is such a good decision-maker. As you probably saw, he's very patient with the ball. He waits to see if there's a double-team coming or where the help side might be, and he's very effective if that does happen, that he'll find the open three-point shooter. So I can certainly understand why Temple, you know, scouted and game planned us that way. And so it left Nick one-on-one, and he's very effective because, you know, he can go both with his right hand, with his left hand. He's got a good enough, you know, jump hook, and he can face up and shoot it as well. So I agree with you, Willie. I mean, that they made a concerted effort to take out Dylan, but I also would say Kevin McClain, the game that he played, I think that helped open things up for Nick on the inside as well.
Yeah, they were so many clutch shots, and I thought it said a lot about Windler that, you know, for a guy that averages 20 points a game, he didn't force it. You know, he let the game come to him.
Agreed.
And he made great passes, he made the right plays, got a bunch of rebounds, and still was a key to the win.
I agree. You know, he's got to feel a little bit of the pressure of, you know, wanting to carry this team, and he's done that so many times for us, obviously. But the best part about him is he's a team player, and he wants what's going to be best for the team and getting a win. And so he doesn't force it, and but he can still be effective in so many other ways. I think the three steals are illustrative of that, and obviously his rebounding. He's got such a knack for that. He's got great timing with those long arms, and you know, to get 14 rebounds. There's so many ways you can affect a game, and Dylan can do it in obviously different facets.
I'm so curious today to see what Maryland does. Maryland's an excellent defensive team, and they've got this kid, Bruno Fernando, who is a tremendous shot blocker, leaper, just the, you know, 6'10", 240. How they decide to try to guard Belmont. So, because Belmont's so good at taking what the defense gives them, but I wonder if they'll try to one-on-one play Musinski with Fernando and not double.
My guess is they will. I mean, Fernando's a beast, and he can block a lot of shots, and they're so good at, you know, taking that block shot and scoring on the other end. And, you know, for us in this game, a game like this, the great equalizer, Willie, as you know, is the three-point shot. So I would imagine they're probably going to try to do some of the similar things. And Nick's just going to have to play well. He's going to have to be physical. And maybe he can get a ball fake, draw a foul or something like that to get their big guy in foul trouble. But, you know, I'm sure, you know, Maryland may show us different looks, but from what I've learned and what I've been told, you know, they're just a straight man-to-man, you know, kind of our guys are better than your guys, and we'll see what happens.
One other thing I would love to point out for people that will be watching Belmont that maybe don't watch them every night during the season. Scott, it's unbelievable how two or three times a game you watch and this is a minimum, where Belmont lines up for an out-of-bounds play or a set play that they've saved. And I don't know if they put these in each game or they have them all year and they just pull them out at the right time. But they have such a great knack for running a great out-of-bounds play when they need a bucket or a backdoor play when the time is right. And I'll give you an example. The backdoor play that they ran for Dylan Windler, where they cleared off one side of the floor and they set up the backdoor from way out at half court, in a just easy basket at a critical time. You cannot put a price on that.
No, I mean, that's Coach Bird. He's so good at designing those plays. They work on them every day in practice. And you're right, though. The key is selling it in when to do it, at what time in the game. And if you go back to the UCLA game, we won that game on a backdoor play to Kevin McLean's. And so I've seen it over the years. I mean, he's so good at designing those inbound plays to get good looks and coming out of timeouts. He's the master. I mean, one of his real strengths is the in-game, you know, how he manages a game and the calls that he makes. It's unreal.
Scott, I feel good. I picked Belmont, but I'm a little nervous today, so I'm not going to be as emphatic as I was on Monday. I did pick you guys. I believe that you're going to get it done, but there's a little bit of nervous energy around me today, so I'm just going to be open and honest with you.
Well, that's understanding. I mean, it's March Madness. Anything can happen. Our guys have got to play really, really well because Maryland's really good. So I understand your hesitation there. But hopefully we can get it done and keep this fun going.
Well, what's interesting is somebody, ever since they've started these play-in games in Dayton, somebody has always come out of Dayton and continued with another victory. So, Belmont's in that group. Somebody from Dayton has to go on and win another game, at least. One other game. So,
yes, I hope it's us.
Yeah, no doubt. Hey, best of luck. We will certainly be watching. Always good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
That is Belmont Athletics Director Scott Corley down in Jacksonville, Florida, and they will tip about 15 minutes when we get off the air today, their big game against the Maryland Terrapins. We will come back with more of Darren Adonik next. First, Willie, you've got a word about Lee Company.
All right, let's tell you about Lee Company. 567-1000 is the number. We're out here at Bridgestone Arena. And Lee Companies, we tell you from time to time, is a big sponsor of the Nashville Predators. You'll hear their sponsorship of Darren's pregame coverage, game coverage. And when you come out, you'll see a display if you're coming to watch the Predators and the Penguins tonight. So take a look at some of the things they have to offer when you come to the game tonight. They've got great things for your home or your business. I always talk about the home maintenance plan. It's a very efficient program, but talk to people about what they can do for your business as well. There's a wide array of things. So go to LeeCompany.com and tell them what you're looking for. You'll see it all on the website, and then give them a call at 567-1000. General maintenance, home improvement, security systems, and on down the line. It's Lee Company, proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators.
Back here on Darren Adonik. Right now, NCAA tournament underway. Minnesota right now beating Louisville by 5 at the half. They're getting ready to resume second half here shortly in Des Moines, Iowa. Right now, all LSU. Tigers up 37-25 with about 3 minutes to go in the first half over Yale. And it looks like Waters is off to a really good start. Tremont Waters with 11 points for LSU and 6 assists. And the big man, Naz Reid, is kind of having his way with Yale underneath.
Yeah, and outside. You know, he's a guy that can hit the standstill three, and he's already hit one or two. And, you know, Yale just does not deal with size like that very often. So LSU is doing the things that they need to do. They're crashing the offensive boards. Their shot selection has not been good at all, but they're making up for it. Yale got down 9-0, got back to within 2, looked like they were settling in, but now they are having trouble on every possession dealing with LSU on the offensive end. So LSU off to a very good start here. Have you seen the new commercial with the guy who delivers the food to the referees? Have you seen that?
I haven't.
Pay attention to that one next time you see it.
Okay.
I like this guy. He's got a couple different places he goes and delivers food. It's like a service where, you know, the driver is taking the food to the business.
Yep.
That's what they're – so he's
–
you know,
carry out?
Yeah. You know, with the lift, you know, the whatever you call it.
They've got the new
eats,
curbside.
The eats.
Well,
yeah.
It's not even the curbside. They deliver food now.
Yeah, from whatever restaurant you want or whatever. So he's driving around, and he's delivering it. He's a wisecracking guy. He is a subtly funny guy.
Okay. I'll have to check that out. They're set to tip in about 10 minutes in Salt Lake City. It'll be the 12 seed New Mexico State versus the 5 seed Auburn Tigers, the team that cut down the nets right where we are here at Bridgestone Arena on Sunday. Can Auburn keep that ride going? They're going to tip. We're going to find out in about 10 minutes or so when they get going. And then the next tip will be at 1 o'clock up in Hartford, Connecticut. It'll be the 13 seed Vermont against the 4 seed Florida State. Some of the news that were coming out, P.J. Washington will not suit up and play for Kentucky tonight against Abilene Christian. He's been dealing with that foot injury that happened here on that Saturday afternoon against Tennessee. People, I'd seen Kyle Tucker tweeting during the week that he had been spotted in a boot. So if you're Kentucky, you have to believe that the rest of that roster can get it done and beat Abilene Christian. Then you'll have the winner of Seton Hall and Wofford. And if they get to that point, you know, what the question is, will they sit him again and try to beat the winner of Wofford, Seton Hall without P.J. Washington to preserve him for then the Sweet 16 run?
Yeah, that's a good question. He's a key player for sure. You'd hate to have to go into that second round without him, which is probably why they're sitting him. Now, speaking of Abilene Christian, did you see the story of their coach?
Nope.
Okay, so they win the tournament. They're celebrating, and he rips his pants on lucky suit. And he says, hey, we only got one place that does suits. This is my lucky suit. I only own one suit. I can't get it fixed in time. I'm just going out there. I'm going to have ripped pants.
Really?
Yeah.
So he's going to coach tonight
in ripped
pants.
Now, whether he actually does that, whether he actually does it or not, remains to be seen because Candace Parker and Brendan Hayward are going, come on, somebody help this guy out. You know, somebody's got a tailor.
Got a tailor somewhere, right?
You know, hook him up.
What about the hotel they're staying in?
In Jacksonville, come on, they got to have somebody, they're saying. So he goes, I'm not going out and getting a new suit. This is my suit.
Wow.
I own one suit. We won the title in this suit. I'm going out with it. So take a look at the pants on the coach. I wouldn't normally say that about a coach, but check his pants.
We'll see how lucky they are tonight. Good news is no P.J. Washington for Kentucky, and that is obviously a huge blow to their roster. Syracuse will finish off the action tonight. They'll be the final tip out in Salt Lake City. They're the 8 seed. They'll go up against the 9 seed Baylor Bears, and we learned that the Orange will be without Frank Howard. He has been suspended. Like I said, depends on who you talk to.
Ugh.
People that are close to the program, some believe that they may be better off without Frank Howard moving forward. Others do not believe so. So you do wonder what was going on behind the scenes with Frank Howard. Was he serving as a distraction?
Well, there's a weird thing. This is what I think about every year when Syracuse is in the tournament. Because the names change, the players change, but one thing does not change. You got to play against the 2-3 zone for 40 minutes when you play Syracuse. And so who is in that? I'm trying to picture who is the one seed in that bracket. Is that Duke?
What bracket?
In the bracket that Syracuse is in. It's not Duke.
Well, that's out west. That's probably Gonzaga, right? I don't have it in front of me, but that's Salt Lake City. That's got to be – what region is that?
I'm trying to remember. If Syracuse
that's
wins
the west region, that's got to be Gonzaga.
Actually Gonzaga, yes.
It is Gonzaga. Okay, so Gonzaga – he's got to be thinking to themselves, golly, I hope Syracuse doesn't win because I don't want to deal with that zone. We've seen Syracuse as a low seed make deep runs in the tournament just because they get hot with the zone or they face a team that just doesn't quite figure it out. So that would be an interesting team for Gonzaga to face to me in the second round if it happens. But, they got to get through the first round. Meanwhile, LSU is just carving
just
up.
Yale.
They're running circles around Yale.
Yale looks like they are spinning. There looks like literally they're spinning.
They don't know what hit them here.
45-29.
They had to feel good when they were down 9-0. They got the timeout. They came back, and I thought they looked like they were settling in, and then LSU came back with a second wave, and they've all but put Yale away here at the half, up by 16.
Kansas State plays tomorrow. Speaking of themes of – finding out news, they have found out that a guy that's vitally important to them in Wade will not play. So Kansas State will be without Wade. So that is a big blow. LSU, by the way, up, 16 at the half.
45-29. Meanwhile, Minnesota hit – a three right on the last possession of the first half with about 4 seconds left. Came out first possession of the second half and hit a three. So they're up 41-33. So Minnesota playing well and just hit another basket with a foul. So all of a sudden they've gone from up two to up 10 with the free throw, looking for a third straight three-point play against Louisville. That's a big swing. But here's what I'll say about the Kansas State guy. They're used to playing without him. He gets hurt a lot. He's a huge difference maker when he's in there, but he does miss a lot of time, unfortunately for him. He's in the lineup. He's out of the lineup. They're definitely not as good with him out, but they could win a game without him for sure. I wonder what his status is going forward, though.
I think they are not counting on him.
Oh boy,
right. Which could that's a team that went to the Elite Eight last year. I'll be curious to see how all that plays out. So that's some of the games that are on tap. Michigan State and Bradley will be before we get off the air. They will tip, and as we mentioned, we talked with Scott Corley down in Jacksonville. Maryland and Belmont will be at about 2:15 today. Kansas also suits up and plays. I did pull the trigger. I did pick Northeastern. Willie, I was inspired by our interview yesterday. We'll find out how that plays. A really interesting matchup with Murray State and Marquette. I think Florida-Nevada is a toss-up game. A lot of people going with Nevada. Of course, they came out of here last year in the NCAA tournament, winning two games. But I actually picked Florida, but a lot of people are picking Nevada. I took Florida in that one. St. Mary's and Villanova play. Fairleigh Dickinson, who won in Dayton, will take on Gonzaga. Montana, Michigan, Seton Hall, Wofford. We'll find out. I picked Wofford once again, inspired by another interview that we had with Fletcher McGee. Old Dominion and Purdue. So those are the games that you will see tonight. We'll learn a little bit more about the opponent of the Predators tonight, the Penguins. We do that next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Should be another fun night here in Smashville this evening. Back here on Darren and Donick, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here inside Bridgestone Arena. Jack Daniels Barrel House, you know what that means. Our site here means the Predators have a home game tonight. It's the Pittsburgh Penguins. This is game 75 in the regular season for the Predators, and this is the first meeting with Pittsburgh. So, of course, they're getting ready to play, see each other a couple of times.
They did not play in the calendar year 2018.
It's crazy.
It's crazy to think about it.
Even though we talked about this on the show earlier in the week, the previous year they played Pittsburgh right out of the gates both times, and that was it.
Yep. November 11th of 2017
first
is the last time
month,
they played.
Yeah, yep. they were done. So to help
a lot,
us.
A lot has happened.
To help us with the opponent tonight is Josh Yowie from The Athletic. He covers the Penguins. He's here on site with us. Josh, how you doing?
Gentlemen, it's good to be here. I always enjoy Nashville, and I was just telling you during the break, Sidney Crosby does have Tennessee in the Final Four if anyone wants to consider not booing him quite as much tonight. I said maybe they won't boo you tonight if we make that public. He said, I seriously doubt that.
He's probably right. He's used to, you know, it is interesting that you bring that up, and how much does that happen on the road for him, because we've laughed about this since PK's been here. I mean, we don't even talk about it anymore because when PK goes on the road, I mean, he's booed so much. What about Crosby?
I've never covered an athlete who gets the reception that he does in that regard. Some cities are worse than Philadelphia is the worst by far. I can't even tell you the things I've heard him call.
It's not arable.
No, it certainly isn't. You know what the funny thing is, though? There are a few Canadian cities where he's treated differently. In Montreal, they always politely applaud him when he takes
the
ice. Yeah, I guess all the gold medals go a long way. In Western Canada, he's royalty. But in Ottawa, they hate him. They've had a few playoff series, so I think that has something to do with it. But in general, in Canada, he's really treated warmly. It's interesting to watch. But divisional cities, especially in New York and Philly, oh my gosh, it's not pretty.
Isn't it interesting, Josh, how close it was to Nashville playing Ottawa in the Stanley Cup Final? Just think about it. Game 7, double overtime in Ottawa. I mean, it was almost the Senators and the Predators in the Stanley Cup Final.
It's amazing. And now you look at what's happened to the Senators.
Right.
It's amazing. In less than 2 years, Chris Kunitz knuckleball did to change hockey history. There'd probably be a Stanley Cup here. So I think the Predators absolutely would have beaten that team if they played in the final. The Penguins were the better team than Ottawa, certainly. But it was actually a great series. It's hard to believe, though. It's been less than 2 years. So much has changed since then.
So much has changed. It looks like, just from afar, from our vantage point, Pittsburgh, and we've said that there are certain teams in all sports you just know that time of year they start ramping things up and they start getting ready for postseason play. Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh is one of those teams that they've been through all this. They've been through all the wars. And is that true? Do they look like a team that's ramping things up, getting ready for postseason play?
They are. I think there's a perception with the Penguins that they only care so much in the first 3 months, then they ramp it up. And I hate to acknowledge that, but I think there is an element of truth there. They're probably not going to win the division. I promise you they don't care. They've won 5 cups in franchise history. Only one of those 5 seasons did they win the division.
That's amazing.
They just don't – it's just not a priority to them at all. They just want to be playing well going into the playoffs, which isn't to say that they don't have their flaws. I think they do. As every team does, though. But there's no question. They've been playing much better, even with Evgeny Malkin out of the lineup, and he still is out. He won't play tonight. But even without him, you can see they are, as Mike Sullivan would say, playing the game the right way. Where in October and November, it was pond hockey, giving up 2-on-1s left and right. They're not really doing that as much now. So they're clearly a little more focused at this juncture than they were a couple of months ago.
It is interesting. You know, everybody focuses in on their market, right? Their team mm-hmm. and their market. And we've been sitting here because people last year was, you know, I don't want to say it was an anomaly because hopefully it will happen again. But, you know, the Predators cruised to a President's Trophy. Yeah, they had Winnipeg pushing them all year, just happened to be the team in their division. But to have something go so right for 82 games is hard to do, as you know. And there were very, very few lulls in the season, very few dips, like a 3-game losing streak that happened, I think, once, Willie, last year. And maybe it was like, what is going on with this team? And it's like, folks, you know, really. And so this year, with all the inconsistencies up and down, it's been hard for everybody. What is wrong with this team? What is going on? But what you just said, if you look around the league, take Tampa out and put them on an island with Tom Hanks, right, all by themselves in Castaway. Uh-huh. The league has looked like that. Everybody has warts.
No, they do. And I've covered a few of the Penguins' Stanley Cup runs, and I can tell you that in every season there was so much adversity at some point to deal with. The 2009 championship team, they were out of a playoff spot. They were 11th in the Eastern Conference in the middle of February.
Wow.
And nobody thought that team was going to win a Stanley Cup. That's the way it works, though. It really isn't. And when you look at the Predators now, listen, this isn't their first rodeo. They made it to the final 2 years ago. They were a really good team last season, so I think whether they want to admit it or not, and I don't cover them, but I'm sure they realize, okay, these games in January, our coach can tell us they all mean the same. They don't. We know they don't because we've played a lot of playoff games. So I think in the back of their minds, they know when the time to ramp it up is. And I certainly view them as one of the best teams in the West. I don't think there's any question. I still think on paper, with all due respect to what San Jose and Calgary have done, I still think Winnipeg and Nashville might be the two best teams in the West, but they're not putting up the numbers they did last season in the regular season, which come April and May means absolutely nothing, really.
So the Penguins have the skins on the wall, so to speak. But if I ask you, Josh, to rank the Eastern Conference like the top five right now, where is Pittsburgh in that pecking order?
Well, we know who number one is because Tampa is – in its
they're
own
just,
universe.
Yeah, they're different.
And that doesn't mean that they will win the whole thing. History tells us.
The last 10 years, one time, Chicago.
I'm telling you. And
believe me, we heard that from the listeners every day on
the
show last year. Oh, don't win the President's Trophy. It's a horror. It's bad. It's bad.
I bet you did. You know what's funny? With all due respect to Toronto and Boston and their point totals, especially Toronto, I know they're good. They haven't won a playoff series yet under Mike Babcock. I don't take them as seriously as I take Washington and Pittsburgh. They've won the last 3 cups. I still think those are the next kind of tier of teams. I am convinced Pittsburgh and Washington will play in the second round again. They always do. And I couldn't tell you who's going to win that series. The Penguins have beaten them 3 of 4 this year. They're very comfortable. And I promise you they want one more shot at them after what happened last year. And the winner of that series will probably play Tampa in the Eastern Conference Final, and Tampa will be the favorite. But who knows? I mean, that's not an easy matchup necessarily for Tampa, so we'll see. So I'd probably say Tampa, Pittsburgh, Washington is my top three with Boston and Toronto. Very good teams. Just in terms of who has the best chance to come out of the East, I would put them just a hair below because we know they have to go through Tampa. And you know what? Until they do it in the playoffs, especially Toronto, we know Pittsburgh and Washington can. That means something to me.
Josh Owey is with us from The Athletic covering the Pittsburgh Penguins who are in town here tonight. And Josh, in looking at some of the recent games, I got a chance to watch Sunday evening the Battle of Pennsylvania, which is always tough. And one thing that dawned on me, even though the Penguins lost the game and they've had this little rut here where they've been giving up late goals with the Goldie Pope, Matt Murray looks very sharp. He's made a lot of really good saves. He did in that game in particular against the Flyers, and then followed it up, I thought, with a pretty good performance against against Carolina the other night.
He had a really, really bad start to the season. October, November, he was awful. Then he was out for a month. From about, I think he came back December 17th. From that point until now, he's been quite good. And in the last couple of weeks in particular, he kind of got challenged by Mike Sullivan. There was a game in Buffalo. He gave up a late goal. And by the way, the Penguins have given up 7 goals this season with the opposition's goaltender pulled, which is a horrible number.
Wow.
Yeah. And there was a game in Buffalo, I think it was March 1st or 2nd, and the Penguins played in Montreal the next night. And Casey DeSmith was supposed to get the start in Montreal. When the plane landed in Montreal, Mike Sullivan told Murray to stay on the plane. He said, "You're playing tomorrow." And Murray's got a bad injury history. He gets hurt a lot, so they don't like him playing back-to-back nights. Sullivan said, "You're playing anyway." Had an unbelievable game that night. He's been terrific ever since then. So I would say he's playing his best of the season. The same old thing with him. He has one weakness. He does not have a great glove hand. Everybody knows. I'm sure that's the Predator scouting report. It's everyone's. So that's his wart, if you will. But he has been really, really good.
How about Jake Guentzel, too? I mean, he's a guy that, of course, is still, I'm sure, a painful memory for Predator fans because of how good he was in that Stanley Cup final a couple years ago. But he's certainly no flash in the pan. 37 goals this year.
No, I'm glad you brought that up because Sidney Crosby deserved the Conn Smythe. But if Jake Guentzel would have scored the game winner instead of Patrick Hornquist, that would have been 14 goals in the playoffs with how great he was in the final. He would have gotten some votes, I have no doubt. Yeah, you said it, 37 goals. Jake Guentzel has 23 career playoff goals in 37 games. He is a big-game player if ever there's been one. And his chemistry with Sidney Crosby is off the charts. Sid has never had a winger with him who just played that kind of game with him, who thought the game exactly the way he does. Guentzel's not a big guy. He's not really the fastest. He doesn't shoot the puck that hard. But he's going to score 40 goals this year, and it's not just because Sid puts the puck on a platter for him. Yeah, maybe that's part of it, but it's not that simple. They think the game the same way, and for a small guy, and frankly, Sid's not a big guy either. They both go to the net and score a ton of dirty goals, so it just makes them very difficult to play against.
The other guy that I thought was worth mentioning for our interview tonight, because he missed the Stanley Cup final a couple years ago, and it speaks a lot to the Penguins. They're still able to win it without him, but Chris Letang has just come off the injury. This will be his second game back. He's a guy that is such a big difference maker for them.
Yeah, he is. He's having maybe his best season. I thought he's not going to win the Norris. He missed 12 games with a recent neck injury. But if he had stayed healthy all season, I think he may have been a finalist at least. He doesn't always get the credit he deserves. When you play with Crosby and Malkin and Kessel, all these big names, I think a lot of people assume, he's getting points because he plays with those guys. But Chris Letang is a great hockey player. The Penguins' transition game is night and day when he's not in the lineup and when he is. Just a brilliant skater, and he's got 16 goals now, I think, which ties a career high. He's done it all for them all season. He'll play 30 minutes a night if you need him to. He's a one-man breakout, and he and Brian Dumoulin together, just a wonderful pair. You'll see them play heavy minutes against the Preds tonight.
Josh, we've been talking here for several seasons now about this being the Predators' window. Mm-hmm. Like, they're in this window to win now. How long is the window open, you think, in Pittsburgh? I mean, still have the superstars. You've got first ballot Hall of Famers on that roster, but they're getting up there. They've been in there in the league for a long time. What is this window, you think, in Pittsburgh?
It's a great question, and people bring it up all the time. The window's closing. Well, as long as Crosby is still near the height of his power, I don't think the window ever closes. Back in 2015, they had a few really bad playoff runs in a row, so they made a bunch of changes on the fly. I would say it was reloading more than rebuilding, and they won 2 cups. I think they probably have a couple of more years where they can do that. Crosby will be 32 this summer, so he's still great. He's not a kid anymore. Malkin will be 33 this summer, and his play has not been as good this season. He and Kessel have really had off years, their point totals notwithstanding.
But I'd love to have an off year where I get more than 1 point per game.
I know.
It's unbelievable, those guys.
I know, but they're also both minus 23. I mean, they've made a lot of mistakes. They've driven their coach crazy. But, yeah, the expectations, especially with Malkin. I mean, Malkin's 14th all-time in points per game. He's obviously a first-ballot Hall of Famer. But as long as Crosby and Malkin really are still putting up huge numbers, I don't think the window closes. The problem for the Penguins, though, they have nothing in their farm system, and they really don't. And when you trade your first-round pick every year and trade your prospects, that's what happens.
Yeah.
And Chicago's running into the same thing. But, as long as Crosby's playing at this level, and given that Matt Murray's 24 years old, I think they're at least assured to be a playoff team for a few more years. And with the right moves, could they have another cup in them? It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah, Malkin and Crosby kind of remind me of LeBron. Like, you think they're like 45, but just because they've, between regular season and postseason,
yep,
they've logged so many games in their career.
No, you're right. And, you know, Crosby has had to reinvent himself a little bit. He doesn't score on the rush as much as he once did. He's still really fast. He's not Connor McDavid. You know, when Crosby came into the league, though, he would look like the way McDavid looks now. He was just so much faster than anyone else. He's not really that guy anymore, but down low, he's so strong, so powerful, and he plays more of a half-court offense now, I think, but he does it brilliantly.
Yeah. I will tell you, 2 years ago, we really enjoyed our time in Pittsburgh. Wish the results were a little bit different, but we did have a good time there for the Stanley Cup Final.
We had a really good time.
Did you?
Yes, we did.
Well, I can tell you, the Pittsburgh media, I mean, I think there were a couple of people who had to go to the hospital in Nashville 2 years ago, so... I mean, I don't know if the liver poisoning
Well, wait a minute.
Ever...
We didn't have that good of a time.
No, it's an underrated city. People always, when you come to Pittsburgh for the first time, it's like, wow, I kind of like it here.
Oh,
it always
man.
Surprises
it's a,
people.
Yeah. It's no, a great downtown.
We enjoyed it. We really had a good time.
Didn't hurt that the Pirates were in town. We caught
no,
a little baseball there.
Baseball.
That was good.
Not a bad ballpark to see.
Oh,
right?
No, it's ballpark. A beautiful, yeah? beautiful ballpark. Like, whoever came up with the design and the way it sits
oh, yeah.
in the city, hats off to them because they did a good job.
Nah, it's a good sports town, too. It really is.
Thanks for stopping by. Hope you don't end up in the hospital, but good to see you,
my
Josh.
My pleasure.
Josh Yowie covers the Penguins for The Athletic. Thank you, Victor. We agree with you. By the way, what's wrong with Victor Arvidsson? He didn't score Tuesday. What's wrong with him?
Well, he's going for the Cy Young Award.
He's slumping.
Right now.
He's slumping. He went a game without a goal.
Chris Mason pointed out to me he's 31 goals and 12 assists. They call that in the hockey circles, the Cy Young, more goals than assists. It sounds like a great pitching record. If you went 31 and 12, that'd be a pretty good. That's like a Cy. That is like a Cy Young, like actual Cy Young.
Yeah.
Remember, they used to like pitch every other game back then, and so those guys would have ridiculous records. But he has had an amazing year. He did actually pick up an assist the
he
other night on the empty net goal there. So, you just have to hope that continues. For the Predators, the chemistry, the groove with those three. And then, you know, I've been saying it for a long time, even though when somebody would throw out the line, hey, they're top heavy, you know, they're a one-line team, I think that's completely off. The third and fourth lines chip in the way a third and fourth line should chip in. I like their third and fourth lines regardless of what combination of players they put there. The key is the second line, and that's what they still – I think are looking at, working on, and trying to get right. But I do think that it's potentially there. It's just a matter of who ends up grabbing those roles and where it happens. But that's what's got to get right in some form or fashion, whether it's Kyle Turris or any other combination of players. Because I think Mikhail Granlund is a great addition. I'm not worried about him at all. I think he's doing exactly what they want. It's just a matter of figuring out the right two guys to play with him. Because that has not materialized yet. It's
nope.
been different guys.
Not yet. Neither is my bracket because it looks like the first game I am taking a big X.
I'm going 0-2.
Minnesota is absolutely destroying Chris Mack and the Louisville Cardinals.
They're on
62-43,
fire.
62-43, just past the midway point in the second half. They have just dominated Louisville in the second half. That puppy is over. I'd be surprised if there was a Louisville comeback in that one just because of how bad they have looked in the second half. Minnesota has come out on – what have they outscored them in the second half? Louisville's got
– It was 35-33 with 5 seconds to go in the first half.
They've been outscored like 30-10?
Since then, it is – what is – 27-10. Since then, Minnesota hit a three right at the buzzer going into the half. They came out of the gate and hit a three in the first possession of the second half. And they have not looked back. I got to see what they are shooting from three. Minnesota from three is 10 for 24. And overall, they're 50%. How about this? They're 6 for 13 from the free throw line, and they're still up by 19.
Wow. LSU is hammering Yale.
It's a mismatch.
Luckily, I picked that one right there.
I missed this one bad.
I was going to say, it looks like it's going to be about a 25-point win for LSU. They're up 49-31. Was 17.5 to go in that one. New Mexico State now trailing Auburn 21-19 with 8:45 left in the first half. Auburn has been trying to play catch-up with New Mexico State in that one, although they just took a basket off the board. So they're showing now tied at 19. I don't know. Obviously, we don't have that game in front of us. They had Auburn up 21-19, then took a basket off. It's 19
no, it's,
all.
Yeah, it's 21-19.
Okay. I don't know what they did on their ticker there.
I don't know what's going on.
So 21-19 Auburn.
Ticker issues.
So let's talk about –
By the way, Marquise wanted to point out – Marquise, how's your bracket going so far?
I am 2-0 right now.
The game's not over yet, Marquise.
Hold on.
Well, he's going on what we said. He's going
Minnesota
on – we're already declaring him over.
Minnesota's definitely over. I'm talking about LSU. I had LSU and I had Minnesota. So far, I'm doing good. But I'm looking at that Auburn score, and it's tied 19. So I did have Auburn in that game.
I have Auburn, too.
Did I take Auburn? I can't even remember. I think I might have taken New Mexico State.
I got to be honest. I am surprised that Minnesota-Louisville has been this lopsided in the last 10, 15 minutes of that game. Wow. But we'll see. I just noticed where Louisville's cut it down to 14. I know that sounds silly, but that went from 20 to 14 pretty quick. So we'll see if they have a run in them. It's important. This is a big one tonight. We just had a really good conversation with Josh Yoey from The Athletic, who covers the Penguins. And – is pretty interesting. You know, all the stuff we've talked about here about this team and the mentality and saving things up. I mean, he basically said, while they don't admit it, he's saying that they do the same thing, right? The Pittsburgh, because they've been through the wars in postseason play, who's kidding who? Game 37 and 38 and 39 and 46 and all that. The coach can be saying stuff, but realistically – it's hard, right? It's hard for 82 games when you know you're good, you know you're going to play. And how about that? Five cups, only once has Pittsburgh won the division. In five titles, once were they the division winner.
Yeah. But as he pointed out, it's not just that they didn't win the division. There's been a couple of these years. This year is no exception. Last year was the same way, where – And 2 years ago, this was happening. They get to a point in the season where it's like February, and they're out of the playoffs. They're not like just, well, they're going to finish second, or they're going to finish. They were outside of the wild card. And even just a couple of weeks ago, it was Pittsburgh, Montreal, and Columbus all fighting, and Carolina was in
for
there.
Wild card spots.
All about the same
yeah.
team. And one of those teams is going to get left out. Right now, Montreal is on the outside looking in because Pittsburgh has surged. But it's almost like they need – to get pushed. It's almost like they need their weight as long as they put. It's like somebody who waits to the last minute and then crams for the test and then still gets an A on the test. It seems like that's them, right? They just wait and wait and wait. Hey, it's what's going to happen? The goalie's not playing well. All of a sudden, it seems to come together at the right time for them.
I couldn't stand those people in school either, man. It's like, have you studied? No. The test is tomorrow.
I'll hit it tonight. Yeah.
Like, really? And then they cram for a couple hours. 3 hours the night before, and they get an A, and I was like, man, forget you.
Yeah, we all know those people.
Forget you, man.
And they ain't me.
It wasn't me either, I can tell you that. So this will be a big one as the Predators see. Look, I don't want to – I certainly think they – you want to win the division, right? But if you don't, I think what's more important right now, it's about keeping St. Louis and Dallas – a distant third from you, right? I think. Look, like I said,
yeah, you don't want, to
win the division,
slip down.
But
there.
At worst, you want to go on and get that second spot so you can have home ice, right in the first round. That's what you want.
Yes.
And so you need to keep distance. You need to keep St. Louis and Dallas at a safe distance. So to do that, they'll need to pick up some more points tonight against Pittsburgh. That is going to do it for our third hour. We'll come back. Speaking of The Athletic, Richard Deitch will kick the hour off. With him, we'll do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.